Welcome back to The Stacks, a book podcast hosted by me, Tracy Thomas. For The Stacks Book Club, we're discussing Rap Dad by Juan Vidal today. Back again for more fun is actor Josh Segarra. There are a little bit of spoilers this week, but not really because there isn't a ton to spoil in the book, so I'm just giving you that kind of semi-warning. Also, if you haven't yet, go back and check out our episode of The Short Stacks with author Juan Vidal, where he talks about his process in writing Rap Dad. As you all know, The Stacks is a completely free podcast, and if you feel inclined to help support the show, you can do so by going to patreon.com/thestacks. By joining The Stacks Pack through Patreon, you help to make the show happen every single week. As we grow the show, we need more help to continue to keep up the website, continue with The Short Stacks, and my big goal is to hire a sound person to make the show sound even better. In exchange for your generosity, you earn perks, and I don't want to spoil too much, but merch is on the way. Plus, the virtual book club is always an awesome perk, and there's so much more great stuff over at patreon.com/thestacks, so go check it out and help make this show a reality. If a monthly subscription isn't your thing, you can also do one-time contributions by going to paypal.me/thestackspod. Also in the show notes, you'll find links to everything we talk about on today's episode. Shopping through these links gives The Stacks a small commission and it comes at no cost to you. So if you're shopping anyway, why not help out this podcast by shopping through our links? If you set goals around reading more nonfiction in 2019, I would suggest you check out My Mentor Book Club. They're a monthly subscription box of two newly released nonfiction books. They come to your door every month and shipping is totally free. You can cancel at any time, and listeners of this show get a 50% off discount for their first box. So go to mymentorbookclub.com/thestacks. Audible is our other sponsor. They have audiobooks of all sorts, an amazing selection. Any book you get through Audible is yours, no matter if you stay or leave the platform. And it's really high quality books. So check it out, audibletrial.com/thestacks, and you'll get a free 30-day trial and a free audiobook download. Are you following The Stacks on our social media? If not, you should. You can find links to our accounts in the show notes. Follow us and make sure you never miss any exciting announcements, book reviews, and upcoming giveaways. Please take a moment to subscribe, rate, and review this show. It goes a long way to helping us reach new audiences and in turn be able to book new guests. So if you haven't yet, take a moment, rate, and review the show. Our most recent review comes from Sean with a coffee and smile. Here's what they say. Thank you, Tracy, for creating the show and introducing me to books I would never normally read. I love everything about the show and can't wait to see what this next year brings. Thank you so much, Sean, and thank you all so much for listening to the show and giving us ratings and reviews. I cannot tell you how much it helps and how appreciative I am to all of you. Okay, now it's time for my conversation with Josh Segarra about Rap Dad by Juan Vidal. All right, y'all, we are back with another episode of The Stacks, and today for The Stacks Book Club, we are talking about Rap Dad by Juan Vidal. The book is called Rap Dad, A Story of Family and the Subculture That Shaped a Generation, and our guest again today is actor Josh Segarra. Josh, welcome back.
Thanks, Trace, for having me.
We're happy that you're here. Okay, last week we talked a bunch about this book. We kind of like teased it. You said that you really liked it,
yeah.
That it taught you a lot, yeah. That it made you cry.
Yeah.
What else? What did you think of the book?
My son was born now a little over 2 years ago. His birthday is September 30th. And ever since he got here, it's process, right? Mm-hmm. You're just learning what this thing feels like. Mm-hmm. Fatherhood, you mm-hmm. know? And reading Rap Dad, man, Juan just kind of, he put into words a lot of the things that I'd been feeling at different times, whether they be big thoughts, small thoughts, things that keep you up, things that let you sleep better. Mm-hmm. And that's what I thought of it, you know, kind of hearing his journey growing up and then, you know, his journey with the church and right. then his journey as a father. And now he's got four kids, I believe. He's got four kiddos, man. So I got a lot to learn from that man. So I was just trying to take as much as I could from these pages.
Man, four kids.
Yeah.
That's no joke. I was like,
That's respect.
I mean, even
right
in the book,
brother.
He was like, yeah, I have four kids. It's like, that's right. You sure do. I'm sitting here like, do I want to have a child?
You're going to be the best mom.
I don't know. But four kids, I feel strongly that I don't think I could hang. I liked the book. I liked Juan a lot. Like, I felt like I would want to be friends with him through reading his book. Like, just like knowing that someone wrote a book about being a parent in hip hop, I was like, that's already dope. Like, the person who thinks that way is someone that I feel like I could be cool with, right? Mm-hmm. So like I went in with like a very warm feeling towards him. For me, some of the book, I just felt like it was a little disjointed at times. Like I didn't really know what the point was, but there are moments or like vignettes or flashes throughout this book that I think are like awesome and so amazing. And then there were just other parts that I felt like just felt like connector for me. And some of it might be that I'm not a man, and some of it might be that I'm not a parent, and some of it might be that I'm not Colombian. And like, so there were things that I might not have, that like might have missed for me that might have landed for you or someone else just based on like where you're coming from. Because I don't think, and this is not a pan, I think this is, I mean this in the most positive way, I don't think that this book is for everybody. And like, I think that that's okay. Like I almost appreciate it more when a book is for a specific audience and someone's taking the time to talk about like this tiny thing instead of trying to be like, life, like we all relate, you know? I don't know, like I feel like there's TV shows like that too, or like movies where you're like, this is like so, this is like for such a small audience. And I don't think this book is for that small of an audience, but I do think that like some of this book just like wasn't necessarily intended for me, and so it didn't land with me.
Well, I 100% see what you're saying, you know? And the other side of that coin to me is that there were so many things that were so specific,
right,
that when I'm in conversation with people that I try to explain, that I have no idea how to explain.
Right.
And there were things in there that I felt like, oh my God, Juan, I'm just going to, do you mind if I just take this paragraph and say it to somebody if they ask something? So it that's twofold. I hear that, and then it makes me go, oh, then maybe that is a good thing about this book, that it's describing this journey as, and in his words, a fatherless generation where hip hop was the father, whereas my father was very present in my life, and I regard him as my superhero. But my mom too. I had very present parents. And hip hop, for me, was more of an identity that I was chasing as a kid. I wanted to be cool. I wanted to have swag.
Right.
I was listening to Christian hip hop, you know, which at the time was not that cool, you know, like, but that
at
was
at the time, yeah, comma, I mean, always.
Comma.
Backslash never was
stop
that cool.
Playing. Know, I'll pop it on every once in a while still. I'll listen to a little Kirk Franklin, you know, like, I listen
is that,
to my man's.
That's not gospel.
Do you think, I was going to say, can we talk, like, do we think, it is.
He's I got think some like the closest thing to like really like famous actual pop Christian hip hop would be Chance the Rapper.
Chance, especially that coloring book now.
Yeah, I mean, I joke because.
But I wouldn't even call him a Christian rapper.
No, but I'm saying like the closest thing to like Christian and rapness.
Yeah,
it's like gospel hop or whatever.
Yeah. But do you know a guy named Andy Mineo?
I do.
Love Andy
Mineo. He sings
Mineo.
That song, You Can't Stop
That's
Me.
That's exactly
I played
it.
That at Flywheel, and I secretly figured out that it was Christian rap, but I pretend like it's not.
He used to be Sea Light.
Like Christian Light?
I think so.
Or Christ-like? Light.
Oh.
Ooh, see?
Can't wait to ask Andy.
Andy, tell me about your...
It's my man.
I mean, I think that Juan was also a Christian rapper.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
That's, I mean, that comes across in the book. 100%. So he was like 100%. Out doing like missionary rap.
Yeah, that's exactly what he was doing, him and his partner. No, I mean, like that was the thing, dude. Like growing up in the church and then moving to New York at 18, my head was in 50 million different places.
Right.
And I hadn't, and I've rapped with people about it since then. And I've had my own journey with religion. You know, and that started when I moved to New York and left the safe haven that was my church. And you start learning about the rest of the world. And we can talk about that another day. But that journey that he talked about, like, man, going to churches and praise and worship and all, man, that was such a pivotal part of my youth.
Right. But it's interesting because in his story, at least from how I got it, he wasn't really raised in the church.
No, he found God.
He found the, like,
witches.
He found the church.
Correct.
He didn't even find God. Like, he met some kids who were like, we're going to church. And he was like, all right.
Yeah.
Like,
and they were sick. They were sick lyricists. They were sick rappers.
I'll come too.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
And then he talks about like one of the things that really stuck out to me is the way that he talks about religion and God, especially in the beginning, is like a very analytical take on it that I felt, I was like, that's interesting that you're looking at like, it was like almost like a math equation to him. It was like this much goodness and this much good deed and this much missionary and this much that, and like, that's what makes God. And I feel like that's so rare that people come to religion, A, outside of family, and B, from a point of view where you're dissecting it as you're believing in it. Because part of faith is just that you believe
blind faith.
You trust. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. his faith was like very much tied up in like this equation of God and deed and faith.
Yeah.
So I found that really interesting.
I'm with you. Like that was one of my favorite parts of the whole book.
Yeah.
Because my parents found the church when I was born, when I was like 5 or 6. So after I was born, so it was when my brother was born actually. And I was raised in it, right? And I used to give sermons on Friday nights. I was a 12-year-old kid trying to teach the congregation of God about livelihood. Like, what did I know, you know? But you were taught these skills. Now at 32, I look back and I have no resentment towards the church, but I have a lot of friends that do have a lot of resentment towards the church, you know? But I don't I never was able to put my finger on it until reading this.
Right.
Because I realized that now I look back at my time in the church very analytically.
Right.
It taught me how to speak to adults.
Right.
It gave me presence of mind. It taught me how to make choices for myself.
Right.
Because when you're getting told as a 13-year-old, like, yeah, you can either go to your 8th grade dance, and if Jesus were to come back right now, you'll go to hell. Or you can choose such and such and come to church and do this thing. Those were very big decisions for me at 12, 13, 14 years old. Reading Juan's description of it all, man, I was just like, yep, that's another thing. That's another thing. Like how he talked about how he didn't see God in a lot of his growing up, you know, in his youth, he didn't see the Lord that they were talking about. Mm-hmm. So he had to actively pursue that thing that they were talking about. But that's tough to do, man.
Yeah.
That's tough to find this peace that everyone in the church seems to have. And then you realize that, oh, we're all just actively pursuing. It's just how we get there.
Well, And like what things you use to help yourself get there.
Exactly.
I feel like Juan has a strong moral compass, whether or not he is credited with it or you credit, you know, God or religion with it.
It's Juan's.
To me, it felt like that's just like who he is. Yeah. One of the moments that really stuck out was when he found the wallet or the purse or whatever.
Oh, yeah. So yes.
He's
great.
Like, I found this purse and I'm super excited and I'm going to return it. Even though I could use the money, I'm going to return it.
Yeah.
So he like returns it. The lady comes and he's like, I'm about to get this reward. Like this is about to be dope. There's hella cash in here. Yeah. Like I'm good. Yeah. And she gave him $10 and he like went home and was like, this is so whack. Like,
it's like telling his boys, like hoping to get like,
yeah,
so, was
like
it
some credit? Like, yeah, he credit like, for tell it. His family. Like I did this and they were like, what? In God's name. But I did. I liked that moment a lot. I could relate to that. But see, I'm not religious at all. And I would do the same thing because I just am like a really goody goody two shoes. And it's funny that depending on what you believe in, how you justify things like that. Like I just say like, oh, that's just who I am. Like I just love a rule. I'm a rule follower. And for him, like that was tied up in being a good Christian.
That's exactly.
Even though there are people who are good Christians who would have taken the money.
Correct.
And like, so, you know.
You said the right word. When he analyzes religion, when he analyzes his journey through faith and humanity and Christianity, dude, it was just so, it resonated so much with me. Because I appreciated his honesty and his candor in which he would describe the problems that he had at times with his faith, the problems that he has at times with fatherhood, with husbandry, with being a family. Like, dude, you're always just trying to figure out how to do it all.
Right.
And faith, Christianity, that requires focus too.
Right.
And he talked about his struggles with that. I just appreciated that. You know, he didn't have to be that honest. I've read a lot of stories about people saying how easy all of these things are.
Sure.
But they're not.
Sure. Yeah. And he definitely comes from a place of like, I don't have a single answer, which I love. Mm-hmm. I love when people don't have answers. Mm-hmm. I recently read this book that I've been gushing about. It's called The Reckonings. And it's a bunch of essays by this amazing woman. Her name's Lacey Johnson. Mm-hmm. And she's talking about like really complicated, challenging issues of our current moment. So she's talking about oil spills and she's talking about, you know, calling out like rape culture and she's talking about, you know, the abuse of women, all this stuff. And throughout the book, she'll say these sentences where she's like this and this and this and this. And then she'll just say, I think. And it's not in a place of like, I think I'm so dumb, I don't get it. But it's literally her saying, I'm thinking about
this. Yeah, absolutely.
And there's something so gratifying to hear a person who has a book that's published and put out into the world by a major publisher saying, I'm still thinking about this.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not sure.
It allows me in.
Right. And it allows us as the reader to say, I'm also thinking about this. And I think maybe I think different about this. Or maybe I think exactly the same. Yeah. Or maybe I think you're wrong, you know? Yeah. But there's this, like, there's room for a conversation between the reader and the author. And I feel like Juan did a great job of allowing his reader in. Because like I said, not everything in this book hit for me, like not everything landed, but I felt like I had room to have that opinion also because of the way that it's written.
100%.
And I'm going to say this now, even though we're already like 15 minutes in, there might be spoilers today, but it's kind of hard to spoil this book.
Yeah, yeah. Don't worry about spoilers.
I mean, this big spoiler is that he becomes a dad. Yeah. And surprise, the title's called Rap Dad. So if you thought he wasn't a dad, your reading comprehension, we could work on it. We could definitely work on it. There might be spoilers, but there's not a ton to spoil, I think, right?
Like, no, I agreed.
It's more just his story. And, to be fair, nothing really happens. Like, there's no like, that's also what's kind of interesting about the book. It's like his life is not exceptional. But it is like great in its normalness. Like he suffers minor traumas or setbacks or, you know, has these like debates and things, but there's nothing that would define this book as a thing that happens.
Mm.
Right.
Mm.
Which I also find refreshing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I see. The word to me, exceptional, is that he's a dad, you know, like spot on, you know, like it's something that, and that's what the conversation really is that he's driving, is that like, we're just trying to redefine these pictures of what we think is normal. And what used to be normal was a distant father. What used to be normal was what the old ways of looking at families. And now we're just redefining it. And because of that redefinition, you know, it is exceptional.
Yeah.
You know?
So when you picked up the book and you saw the title Rap Dad, what did you think a rap, like what did you think the book was going to be?
I thought it was pretty, I think it gave me the exact picture of what this was, you know, how hip hop influenced fathers.
Okay.
I didn't know that he was going to describe how it basically was his absent father, you know, like how hip hop took the place of his father. How I think at the beginning he says that like, who was it? He was quoting, was it Talib Kweli that said like it can't, or Nas, that like hip hop can't teach us what mothers and fathers should, but it's definitely a guidebook, you know, like it can give us those. And when I read Rap Dad, it made me think about like a hip hop dad. It made me think of like what we are today. And I think, that's what it ends up being.
Interesting. So when I saw it, I thought it was going to be like more of a memoir, more of a story of him. Like I thought the first part of the book was going to be like 20 pages of like, this is my backstory. And then I thought it was going to be like, and then I accidentally became a dad. Like I thought it was going to be all about him figuring out how to become a dad as someone who like loved hip hop. So I was thinking it was like more of like a coming of age into fatherhood story, which it kind of is.
Yeah, yeah.
But when I then started to think about it, after like the 20 pages where I was like, oh, he should be getting his girlfriend pregnant soon or whatever, right? Because that's what I thought was going to happen. Then I was like, oh, rap is the dad.
Yeah.
And then I was later like, oh, no, he is a dad and likes rap. And then I was like, oh, a rap dad is a thing. But like the title kind of morphed throughout the book, right?
Yeah,
like you're saying, like rap was like a parent to him. And I think it's right. I think that, you know, obviously music can't take the place of a parent. Yeah. But I do think, I mean, even for myself, like when we talked on the short stack, Swan said he was born in 1981, which is my brother's age. You and I are 86. Mm-hmm. But I feel like I learned so much about history, recent history, through rap music.
Truth.
Like I would never have known anything about Ronald Reagan as far as like his policies on drugs and black people and urban people and like all of that stuff if it weren't for like Jay-Z.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's so much that I've learned. And, like, this is going to sound really naive and, you know, sorry that I had a very privileged upbringing, but, like, I would never have known about, like, crack dealers if it weren't for, like, the 10 crack commandments.
Yeah.
Like, I learned not to get high on my own supply, you know? Yeah, like, yeah. I learned so, which is, like, sounds so stupid to say now, but, like, I learned about a group of people that I am connected to through my ethnicity and my race that I might not have been exposed to through my own parents or like through my upbringing.
Truth.
So I do feel like rap was like a, not a parent to me, because like, you know, I was brought up in a two-parent home, but that there was, they were like it's like a teacher.
Yeah.
Like shit you weren't learning in school, you could learn in a rap song.
Truth.
And like I would go to my brother and be, or actually I should say it this way. My brother loves to teach me everything. Like he loves to, he's one of those people who just loves to be like, did you know? Like he like has a fact always. So we'd be like listening to music and it would be like, Brenda's got a baby. And be like, do you know? And I'd be like, oh, Brenda's a teenager who's pregnant. Teenagers can be pregnant. This is before like teenage mom. Like, oh my God. So I do, I related to that. Yeah. Like being like, oh, I can learn things that I'm not learning in school that are still like history.
Of course.
And rap, hip hop culture is fucking cool.
It's the best. I mean, he taught me a lot. That track list, I don't know a lot of those songs.
I didn't know a lot of the songs either. So, it's at the end of the book, and it's very cool.
Yeah, I have my Rap Dad playlist on my phone.
Do you have a Spotify playlist?
Of course I do. It's all on there. And hearing him describe hip-hop and rap helping him grow up, music was a big part of my growing up, but I listen to a lot more hip-hop and rap now that I learned from a lot now. Mm-hmm. Chance's Coloring Book, Jay... I mean, a lot of Jay's albums, like he described. So even hearing Juan talk about the albums currently or the ones in the past few years, those are the ones that I started to jump into and be like, oh, man, Coloring Book was on repeat when Gus was born. You know, I still sing You Are Very Special. Yeah. I still sing that to him every night because those things resonate, you know. And I turn to hip hop a lot now, you know, to either get hyped, to get confident, you know. So, yeah.
Do you, well, so you're Puerto Rican.
Yeah.
I'm not going to like lump all Latino men together, but I am going to kind of lump all Latino men together. Yeah. Watch me do it now. Magic trick. Do you feel like mental health was something that was talked about in your family?
Absolutely not.
Because he makes it pretty clear that in his family, he calls it the sadness until like, I don't know, the last 20 pages, he maybe goes back and talks about it.
Yeah.
But did you feel like there was a lot of mental health issues with like the men in your life growing up?
No, like I take a deep breath because you know, like he goes into machismo and I thought that was pretty interesting, you know, because in Puerto Rican culture, in Latin culture, but in my, you know, in my family, I have some men in my life that are, that would be classified as have a lot of machismo, but I'll tell you the truth, like my father, my uncles, they're not like that. Mm-hmm. They're very sensitive men. Mm-hmm. They're very gentle men, let's say. It allowed me the space to be an emotional wreck sometimes as a kid because they loved me endlessly.
Right.
So when I was reading, when he talked a lot about mental health or the sadness, I just kept thinking back to my dad. I thought about his journey leaving. He was born in New York. He was born in the Bronx and he moved to Puerto Rico when he was 9. I thought about my mom who was a military brat, you know, and was born in Kentucky and moved to Puerto Rico when she was a kid. And just how the journey that they went through to give us the life that we have. So I thank my mom and I thank my dad for allowing the space to say, Josh, it's okay that you're sad, or it's okay to cry, Bobby. It's okay. So, yeah, that whole part where he talks about that, I get it 100% because I see those men all the time. I saw them in church all the time. Sure. I would see them, you know, buck up, man, or this and that. But the men that had the most influence in my life, nah, they were, couldn't trade them for anything, you know.
Lucky you.
I'm a lucky kid. That's in that good. Sense. It's truth.
Yeah, I think about it a lot. I think in many communities of color, not just the men, but everybody, there's this idea of like a need to be strong.
Yeah.
And I think some of that comes from how terribly racist America is, and that, you know, people of color feel like they have to be twice as good and that they can't ever let anybody see them slipping or anything like that.
Or what the definition of strong is.
Right. And that also what the definition of like the sadness is, right? Like if your parents are working three jobs to try to make sure that you and your siblings can do this and that, they don't have time to sit down and decompress their own mental state, let alone like talk to you about yours or your other family members and all that kind of stuff. But I do think that it's cultural. There's also not the language in certain cultures for depression or the way that we talk about it in America. But I did find that part really interesting. And like 100%. He had suffered some suicides in his family or attempted suicides. And I just thought, you know, it's really common in communities of color, and it's just really not talked about. And it's almost like in America, only white people are allowed to be depressed and everyone else is just like, oh, they're having a bad day. Right. Like, and that it's like, it's a privilege to be depressed, just like it's a privilege to be addicted to opioids as opposed to being a crackhead. Right. Like that these drugs that are infesting are, and in saying that, I want to be clear. I'm not saying it's a privilege to be a drug addict. It's a terrible thing. But I'm saying that the language around it
and
the way that we're responding to the opioid crisis is the way that we should be trying to respond to all people who are addicted and not just people who are addicted in middle parts of the country and white communities. But I do think he kind of plays with that. And I will say, I wished he had talked more about machismo, because I think it's something that like you understand and he probably understands because it's so much part of his culture and like so much part of being a Latino man. But like it's different for different cultures. And I would have just loved to hear him expound on it more. Because if you're not exposed, like if that's not something that you're used to, like I know about it, but I could have learned more. Do you know what I mean?
Of course, of course. I mean, the thought that runs through my brain, I would love to hear Juan go into it even more so, like you said, but it just kept clicking with me because that's something that I think about all the time with Gus. It's like how to instill fear in him, but still just be loving to him, make him feel strong, let him develop his characteristics that he's going to be,
right.
Like you see all those things reflected back at you, you know? And we're trying to figure out the things that made, I think all the time about like what defined me as a kid, like, and it was just kind of seeing my dad, who he was, you know, seeing my uncle, who he was.
One of the other like anecdotal stories from Juan's life was his dad, who had his own demons for sure. And he was addicted to things, including womanizing. But the fucking craziest thing I've ever heard is that he took Juan on a date with him.
That's crazy.
I was like, this can't be real. Like, this
is wingman of the century right there.
But
Juan,
like, he was like, go be away.
I know. It was like also so entertaining and sad. And,
it was
and,
like both
and
things.
All the things.
Yeah.
You know,
it's definitely like a scene in a movie or something where you're like, oh my God, who is this dad?
I thought it was, you know, him talking about his pop. I love that he had, I appreciate that he told us about his dad. I'm sure that wasn't easy. Because then that evolves into, like, I love him talking about how he wanted to be a dad when he knew he wanted to be a dad at like 16, 17, because I did too. I always dreamed about having a kiddo, meeting my wife.
But
and,
did
and
you ever
family.
Go to any parenting seminars before you had kids?
That's where my man Juan, I can't
I
wait to tell him that is
died.
The best. That
I
is
died.
The best.
I was
thing
reading
I've
it just being
heard.
Like, wait, so he actually like.
And
just,
I love that he went and told his girlfriend too. Like, yeah. I thought he was single when he went. He's like, no. I had a girlfriend.
Like,
I went to
and
this.
Then, like, he was compelled to go.
But, so I appreciated that because he then didn't go down this road of, I wanted to be a dad at 17 and it was awesome and peaches and cherries and everything. He explained, like, yo, just because I thought this at one point then led to this other thing. And that was kind of nutty sometimes, you know?
Right.
Like, I felt like I wasn't balancing it the best way I could at all times. So I just appreciated that, man, that even though you've been thinking about something since you were a teenager, it doesn't mean that you have it all figured out when you get there, you know?
No, totally.
You know?
Yeah. Remind me that I want to go to a parenting seminar, but I don't want to be a parent. I just want to go and experience it.
That'd
like
be really funny.
Like, I'm sure he came up with, like, names for his kids and whatever. Like, he had a whole backstory that he created, like, 100%. Just in case.
Of course.
And I'm sure he just sat in the back and, like, nobody noticed.
Of course.
One of the things that he does throughout the book, which I what I think he did it so well, and I think that it was really good, was that he used his words, his vernacular, his phrases.
Agreed.
Like he would say stuff like, you know, on the come up or whatever. Yes. And like, thank you.
Yes, 100%.
But he didn't do it in an annoying way where it was like every sentence was like, yo, then I went to the store and saw my pops. And he like, yeah. he just would throw it in. Like, cause it was just like, this is, there isn't a standard English way to say this. And it was just felt really natural and great. And I was like, thank you. I always like when people use their language.
Truth.
Especially in their memoir.
Truth.
Because I'm just like, sure, that's you.
Yeah.
That's how you say that.
We talked last week about how I like to read, and I read a lot of times just research-based.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now you saying that makes me realize why I think I love the book even more so, is because I felt like I was talking with Juan. You know, like
right.
he was telling me stories about his life, and I'd never left Juan. Juan was my boy that I was sitting next to, and he was just mm-hmm. telling me like, hey, man, don't stress about right. the thing you're stressing about, bro.
Right.
I've been there.
Right.
Don't stress about the thing you're worried about. I've been there,
right.
and I've come out the other side.
Right.
Yeah, I just feel like I was sitting there with him. So you're spot on with that.
Yeah.
The vernacular. Yeah, you're right.
I'm going to ask you this. You're a parent. Yeah. You're an artist. Juan, it's both of those things. And he kind of, he doesn't expressly say it, but he kind of dances around the idea. And so I'm going to ask you, do you feel like your big goal of becoming an actor has been changed or sacrificed for your other big goal of being a dad?
Mm.
Or maybe another way to say that is, have you had to redefine success?
I was just going to say, like, no, you know, I'll
I don't
tell
mean
you this.
Sacrifice.
It's all I think about. It's all I think about. And I mean that as a positive thing. Before Brace and Gus were even in the picture.
Brace,
you know,
is your wife.
Brace is my wife. Before they were in the picture, when we were in college, you know, like, I never really had a big, clear picture of what I wanted the end to look like.
Mm-hmm.
I know the things I've wanted in my life, and right at the top of the list was to be successful and to have a family,
mm-hmm.
right? And I think the only reason I knew what those two things were is because I had food on my plate all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I got cool things for Christmas from my parents. I had a really happy childhood. And as I got older, I realized it was my parents worked really, really hard to give that to us. And they told us that they loved us all the time. So becoming a dad has made my goal as an actor, it's redefined it. Because before family, it's selfish. You can say you want to make, you know, you want to help your family out. There's those that have that, but my family's doing fine.
Mm-hmm.
So they just want me to be happy.
Right.
So I go, okay. I just want to be happy. So how do you define happiness? Oh, it's because it's the work that you put into something comes back out when you appreciate the art that was created. So Juan says something in his book that stuck with me, man. And it is that Gus is my best work of art.
Mm.
It's that Gus is our project. It takes years. And I'm still in the process of it, to forgive myself for some of my art, if mm-hmm. that makes sense. Mm-hmm. There are some nights on stage where you're not there.
Right.
And you go, man, that felt crazy. And those nights I'd beat myself up a lot if I felt like, man, I didn't give these people that just went to their first Broadway show their Broadway experience. And then when you finally get out of all that, you realize like, no, man, it was there.
Right.
It just didn't feel the same way it always does. So you have to forgive yourself for those things.
Sure.
With Gus, he's my best work of art. I've lost a lot of sleep already in these 2 years because I'm wondering, oh man, maybe I shouldn't baby talk him as much. You know, like
right.
maybe I'm not helping him with his vocabulary, or like maybe I need to do this, or maybe I want to make sure that Brace is happy and she feels like I'm around. If I'm working 5 days a week, I don't want her to feel like this woman stuck in some house with this
right.
toddler who doesn't, right. you know, like. And then I talked to her and she laughs at me. You know,
right.
she's like, hey, why are you thinking crazy like that?
Right.
But it's because, to answer your question, 100% it's redefined it. But I don't know what the answer is.
Sure.
Because I feel successful right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in process. So that 16-year-old kid that just goes, hey, man, you just got to make it.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever that terminology mm-hmm. means. Trace, I'm sitting across from you and we're sitting in LA and we're here and look at where we've gotten, you
right.
know? That's got to be success to us. If sure. not, we're going to kill ourselves by
sure.
the end of it.
Sure.
So then with Gus, it's that. It's definitely redefined it. He's redefined it. And I think I think the answer is that, like, I just want what you asked me last week. At the end of this whole journey, man, who knows what movies have been out there? Who knows what's going to look like? But I'll tell you what, if my son hates me,
right,
none of it was worth it.
Right. Do you ever think, like, there are certain roles that you wouldn't take because of Gus?
I've thought a lot about that, and I don't know. I don't think there will be. Okay. Because this is why you're good at this, Trace, because you brought me back, because I'm thinking about all these other things. Sacrifice, right? Like, when you go into it, when you're offered these parts, there's nobody else to think about other than yourself.
Sure.
So you're spot on, where now I'm thinking about my family. I'm thinking about my mom. I'm thinking about Gus. I'm thinking about Brace. But what's dope about my unit is that they're looking at me going, hey, man, whatever you're going to do, we got you. You know, they got my back 100. I say all of that to say that there might be a part that comes along that I'm going to think longer and harder about.
And, like, it also, you know, we don't even, like we were talking about last week, like, we don't even really know what will be controversial from now in 15 years. And, like, when Gus is 16 or 17, there might be something that you don't take because you're like,
Of course.
What does that mean?
Yeah, but of course.
I think it's interesting to think about, like, your art in relationship to your family, especially once you become a parent. And I think that that was, like, you know, in this book, he goes from performing and being on the road and doing his hip hop group to, you know, being like, I can't do that anymore. Like, I need to settle down into writing. Yeah. And when I spoke to Juan, he talks about that he's always was a writer and like, he always loved writing. And I didn't feel like that came through enough in the book to me. Like, obviously he's writing a book and, you know, his career now is he's a writer, he's a critic, a music and book critic. But I was like, oh, like, he talks about writing and, like, being a poet and that kind of stuff. But I always thought, like, through the book, I thought that his passion was music. And he kind of communicated to me that, and you can hear it in the episode, that his passion was more writing. And, like, and we talked about the difference between performing on stage for instant gratification versus like writing a piece and turning it in and then a few weeks later it's published and what kind of response that gets and, like, that different form of gratification and, like, kind of creating in a chamber. I mean, you know the difference between making a TV show versus being on Broadway. Like, you get that applause right away on Broadway. You do that pivot turn, the sparkles, applause, like, it's done, versus you create a show, you work on it, you're filming it for a long time, and then with something like Netflix, it comes out all at once.
There's a Shea Serrano, and I know Shea.
You know, I had to bring up Shea when I talked to Juan, and I, like, fangirled, and he was like, Juan was like, Shea's nice. I was like, oh. I just was crying about how much I love Shea, so I'm trying to figure out why you're just downplaying. Like, I was like, Shea, I have to tell you, I love Shea.
Shea's so good, man. Well, Shea had that thing that he said. They had their little conversation back and forth where Shea said he treats fatherhood the same way he treats his craft, and you have to work every day.
Yeah,
and that really resonated with me.
Yeah, that's how I feel about being a wife.
Yeah, it's the truth, Trace, is that you have to work every day because we chose the life that we have, and that's what makes us happy, right? So what I battle with is something that Juan discussed a little bit in the book that him and Shea were talking about, was that balance between your craft and your craft at home, your roles that we play, the different coats we put on. And it helped me so much to read that part because it defined for me that thing that our art has to reflect our life.
Right.
You know, and there are times where I'll come home from work and you're beat. You know, you're comatose. And I walk in and there's my mans, you know, wanting to play with his train or wanting to play with his dinosaurs. Right. And there are times where I've gone to bed feeling terrible because I didn't play with him that night. And I you know, told Brace if she could play with him, you know.
Right.
And that feeling is the worst.
Sure.
And but you also have to allow yourself the opportunity to find the balance.
Right.
I can't just show up and go right into playing because that's another role, you know? Yeah. Like, you have to have the energy. I don't want to just be mean to him and be in a bad mood while I play with the trains, you know? Like, I want to be – it's an everyday thought process that I love my wife for forgiving me along the way for having bad days with it and good days with it.
But the other part of it is also that you're, like, part of being a good – and this can be any relationship, a good friend, a good spouse, a good parent, a good daughter, whatever, is that it's not just about how you approach the the relationship, but also how the other person approaches the relationship and finding that balance. Like maybe you come home one day and you're like, I've got cookies. I feel so good. Mm-hmm. You walk in the door and you're like, I'm about to be best dad ever. Yeah. And Brace is like in a heap on the floor.
Cause he's been terrible all day.
He's been terrorizing her all day. And then you're like, you get irritated with her.
Cause
you're like, I just came in with cookies and you didn't even say thank you.
I know. Like, tell me how great of a dad I was today. I know.
But
that's
all part of it too. Like sometimes, like my husband will come home and I'll be like, I made dinner, and he's like, I'm exhausted, I'm going to bed. And I'm literally like, okay, this is crushing my whole life and I want this day to be over and I'm miserable. And then finding a way of being like, maybe it's not all about you. Congratulations. You found a way to make everything about you again.
I mean, I'll tell you, that was my first inclination was to always go to like, I'm going to be in control of all of it.
Right.
And then I had to turn to my partner.
Right.
And have her be like, hey, if I'm kind of stressed because our 2-year-old has been screaming at me all day, don't put that on yourself.
Right.
Like, just you keep doing what you're doing.
Right.
I'm not going to go to bed stressed with it, you know? Like, and that was like, oh, you know? Yeah. And it's all process, man. And he discusses that, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, and he also is not writing a parenting book, which I also really appreciate.
That's what I'm saying. He was just exactly. It wasn't a self-help book. He was just, that's why I felt like I was sitting with him and him just kind of telling me like, hey, man, oh, no, I know what you're talking about when you brought home cookies that day. Yeah. I know what you mean by that,
totally.
Bro. I've been there.
Yeah, and he talks also a lot about his parents and his friends' parents and his friends' family. He says this thing that's like, he uses a quote, I can't remember it, but it's something along the lines of like, show me your friends and I'll show you who you are. Mm-hmm. And so he kind of goes on a little deeper and talks about your friends are a reflection of you and your friends are also like representation of their parents. Mm-hmm. So like your histories become intertwined and that kind of thing. Yeah. And I really liked thinking about that because, you know, you've heard the saying, like, you can't choose your family, right? You can't choose your family, but you do get to choose your friends. And you to choose your spouses. And it's interesting to think now, like as an adult who has friends who are having kids, that who is in my life? Who's made it this far in my life? Because I've had plenty of friends in the first 32 years of my life who I'm no longer friends with for a myriad of reasons. Yeah. But who's in my life and what does that say about me? And who are their families?
Mm.
Right? Like who... what value sets are still in my life? And like as I think about, you know, possibly having children, like whose values will be in my kid's life?
Mm.
You know, I think it's like an interesting thing that he kind of brings up and he thinks about and, you know, where does a friendship begin and where does a family begin and like what's that line? Mm. And, you know, chosen family is a phrase we hear a lot, especially in the queer community, because so many people who are queer don't have families who support them. So they create their own families. And what does that look like?
Of course.
You know,
even being in New York too,
yeah,
you know,
totally.
For those pivotal years, we were picking our family, you know,
for
and
sure.
You pick your family for all those important years of college. And then you have your years after
college. Some of those people are gone.
I was just going to say, then we're now at the next phase of our life, you know, where you're out here and
it's interesting. I love a spreadsheet, but after reading that section, I was like, I want to go through all my friends in my life and like look at them and look at their families and like see
it's
what the common denominator is or, you know, whatever. But I do feel like almost of all my friends that I'm still friends with, who I've been friends with for like 10, I would say 10 or more years, like I've met all of their parents, you know, or most of their parents, or at least a parent or a sibling or something. And you think like, those people, even if you've only met them once, are kind of your family.
Truth.
Like, you know, I see your mom maybe once every two years or 3 years, but I'm like,
yeah, but you're her daughter.
Yes. Like I get to be like her, you know, Tracita.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You're Tracita, of course. It's true.
And so it's just an interesting thing, you know, to think about how important your family is in your day-to-day relationships, even when you don't think that they are.
True.
I don't know. I really like that. I love family. I'm a Cancer.
Me too.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Like, no, I'm a Gemini, but I love family.
You're a Gemini?
Yeah, June 3rd.
How are we friends?
We've been battling.
You
for
are
years.
A Gemini. This is my nightmare. This thing is over. No, I just really like that. I like family, and I like the idea of chosen family, and I like the idea of like that you're interconnected and that the people that are in your life are a reflection of you and that the people whose lives that you're in are a reflection of them.
Like, and Gus is my ultimate reflector.
Right.
You know, like I think about every time we're going to hang as a fam, you think about who's there. You think about what they're going to learn.
Right.
You know, you think about the people in your life right. in the same way that we think about our parents.
Is that why you don't want Gus around me? Because he's gonna become like a racial political activist, and he's gonna be like tearing down the patriarchy.
He's gonna walk in the door going da 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 da, and walk out going, "Well, father,
yeah."
Let me just explain something.
He's gonna be like, "Dad, do you understand how what you're asking mom to do is supporting the white supremacist patriarchy?" I'm like, "That's right, Gus. Tell him about it." My whole goal in life is to make sure everyone's kids end up being just like fully part of the Black Panther Party. And if they're not, I've failed as a friend and as a godparent or any other thing.
Oh my gosh.
That's not a joke either. I made my goddaughter go knock doors with me during the election. I was like, "You're 7. Come on."
She
was like rolling her eyes. But by the end, she was like, "Oh, are we doing this again in 2 years? And I was like, "That's right. You just have to go do this terrible thing that you think is going to be horrible and turns out it's amazing and you get free snacks and you'll love it." Do you – back on track. One of the other things he talks about rap dads and like the absentness of fathers is this like space for credit that like a lot of people in our generation, in this rap dad – current rap dad generation – feel like they need to announce that they're a present father and that they're breaking the cycle and that there's this need for credit. I don't really have a question.
I was going to say, what do you think about that?
I don't know. I think that it's true. I think that there is a part of this book that I'm not wild about because I think it gets like pretty male heavy and like there is a lot of like credit for men who are fathers as if that's an option for women. Like no one's like, "Oh, congratulations, you showed up for your kids today, mom." Like the mom.
But he says
expect,
that. He says right. that in the book.
He does say it in the book. But I like for me, it's like, sure, men want to have credit for doing this thing that, you know, you were part of having the kid. Mm-hmm. Like it wasn't like, oh, it wasn't the Immaculate Conception, right? It wasn't like all of a sudden Mary showed up and was like, "I'm pregnant." And Joseph was like, "Okay." You know, like I get that. If Joseph was like, "Nah, fuck it, I'm not going to take care of this kid." Mm-hmm. Like that would make sense to me. Mm-hmm. But I think that like, we often overlook how major mothers are, and we give so much credit to dads for being present or showing up. And like, he does acknowledge that. And he talks about his mom a lot and how great she was and how hard she worked and, you know, how he took advantage of her sometimes when he was a teenager and like whatever, like that he fucked up and all that. But when he talked to a rapper, Fonte, who was like, "Fathers are the first line of defense for a family and fathers this." And it was like so fathers heavy. And I get it. It's rap dad. It's not rap parents.
Yeah.
But sometimes that's like a turn off to me because I just think we don't acknowledge the role of women, especially women who are struggling to be parents.
Yeah.
Like if you're able to be a stay-at-home mom, which I know is a really fucking hard job, there is some level of privilege to that. And I feel like those women often get a lot of credit for the work that they do. And I feel like a lot of women who are battling to be moms through a lot of other, like they're still, you know, have careers and they still, you know, are maybe they're the single provider or whatever that is. I think that like, they don't get the same credit that a dad who stays around does. Do you know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh, of course, of course.
So that part like kind of irked me a little bit. And it's not so much Juan as it is just like that conversation in general. Like that for staying around, for doing your duty as a parent, men get credit. And for staying around and doing your duty as a mom, you're a mom. Like that's the bare minimum, of course.
I read it slightly different. Okay. I read that he was saying exactly what you're saying, that your moms are rock stars. You're superhuman, you know? So, well, let me just tell you how I felt when I read that.
Okay.
That's part of when I cried. But I think it's because he was talking to me.
Right.
I don't know if it's outright credit, but I think why I appreciated that part specifically is because of him explaining that what he feels he knows is ridiculous.
Sure.
Does that make sense?
Sure.
There are days where I get exactly what he means. And then I go to bed and go, "What are you talking about, Josh?"
Right.
Like, you just went to work and got home in time to give him dinner and put him to bed. Why should you feel a pat on your back?
Right.
And I don't have any opinions about that.
Yeah.
But it's a thing that comes up inside of you. I punish myself for it.
Sure.
So reading him explain that was like, oh man, I get you, bro.
Sure.
And then, of course, the conversation, the much bigger conversation is, dude, I agree with everything you're saying. You know, like, the roles are being redefined as in the times that we're in, you know?
And also, like, I think part of the problem also that people, like, never really want to talk about when it comes to parenting, and I think it's kind of crazy that we don't talk about it more, is that a lot of this, like, absent parenting is also systemic, like, through the way that our government treats children and parenting. Mm-hmm, like, we don't, you know, in other countries, you get a whole year of maternity or paternity leave. Mm. In other countries, like, childcare is easy to find and affordable. Mm. And mm-hmm. part of being a parent or part of being a working parent is that that's available to you. Mm-hmm. And so we put undue stress on parents, men and women, working and not working, to make parenting be harder than it needs to be. Mm. And like, I, as a non-parent, I see the work that parents do. Mm. And I think, fuck, that's so hard. Mm. Like, so I don't get it, but like, I can see as an outsider, like, that looks like no fun.
Mm.
That looks hard and annoying. And ordering at a restaurant looks like no fun. Mm-hmm. And having to go to a public bathroom looks like no fun.
Dude, but even the discussion before you get to the restaurant is tough.
I mean, like, getting in a car seat looks like no fun. And that's like day-to-day stuff. I'm not even talking about like having to have a conversation about a school shooting
or having
to talk to your kids about why other children are in cages in the border of the country that you live in. Like, I think that being a parent is hard enough, and I think that there is not enough responsibility taken on by the country that we live in to make it easy to want to be a parent, or to make it easy to be a parent. And that's not even talking about, obviously, like, in the Black and Brown community, so many men are in jail because the government has crazy fucking laws about stupid shit like drugs, nonviolent drug offenses that have many, many men in jail, and then they become the villains of the story. And it's, you know, it's this horrible cycle. And then that forces the women to have to work extra jobs so they don't get to be there. And then their kids aren't supervised. And like, you know, it's a total train wreck in certain communities. But separate from that, I'm just talking about the way that we treat, like, there are bathrooms that don't even have changing tables. Like, that's fucking dumb. Why are you making this harder? You want me to put my kid on the actual ground? Their naked body in this nasty bathroom that you super did not clean, Panera. It's not clean. Like, I see dirt, you know? So like, I think that parents should get credit for being parents, men, women, a gender, whatever, for raising another child, for being an adoptive parent, a grandparent, an aunt, whatever it is. But I also think that there is like a general sense that dads can do less and get more credit. You know,
well, can I tell you what I took from Juan? What he taught me was,
yeah,
there are times where the ego wants credit.
Yeah.
And he said, I think I'm paraphrasing, but he said that the credit comes 20 years down the road.
Sure.
Remember, you know, I feel like he said that right when the kids grow up. And that,
I'm pretty sure
that's when I started crying.
That's
where it made my heart kind of calm down a little bit, because that's what I struggle with. I check in with myself every day. I check in with Brace every day. We're always talking about where Gus is at in his journey, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether it be talking or whether it be potty training or whether it be running or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And him talking about that, the roles that used to exist and now we're redefining them. And when you are trying, I think a lot about my dad. Over Christmas Eve, we went to a party. We were driving home. It was me driving, Brace in the passenger seat. My little sister Becky was here. Mr. Prudent was here. Mm. And we went together and Gus was there. Mr. Prudent is a friend of ours for the listeners. And they were all sleeping. Brace and I were in the front. They were all sleeping in the back. And we were driving back from this Christmas Eve party. And all I thought about was my dad. Because I thought about every party that we went to as a kid where my dad was driving us home. Mm-hmm. And I'd fall asleep in the car.
Mm-hmm.
I never thought about their mental space. It was about me, whatever I was thinking as a kid.
Right.
And it just made me realize that, like, my pop wasn't doing it for credit.
Right.
He was doing it because his oldest son, wanted to go to Boardwalk and Baseball.
Right.
He wanted to make sure his family got home safe after the Christmas Eve party.
Right.
And that is all learned to me right now. Yeah. You know, like, it's all something that I'm loving going through.
Yeah.
You know, it's not easy. I say loving to put a better term on it, because there are times, like I said, that you try to figure it out and you think you're doing the wrong thing.
Right.
I think I'm, But yeah, it's learned, you know, and yeah. it's, and yeah, I appreciate, thanks for bringing that part of the book up. Cause that part definitely can go a million different ways. Mm-hmm. But from what I took of what he was saying was one, the women in our lives are rock stars, man. But yeah, I think he was, yeah, you're right. He wasn't talking to everybody, but he was definitely talking to me.
Yeah.
You know, he's yeah. definitely talking to me.
I appreciated so much of what he said. And, you know, like I said, what I took from that wasn't all from what he said.
But yeah, just, yeah, no, the bigger conversation. That's what you got me thinking yeah. so much of the bigger conversation, because it's just that. It's we're redefining all these things, you know. But in truth, man, the partnership of parenting is what's incredible, man.
Okay. Well, I have one last thing. And that's just the cover. What do you think of it? It's Rap Dad has some cassette tapes with the subtitle, and then Juan.
I feel like Juan paid me to be here because I love it, dude. I love that it's straight. I love that it says Rap Dad. I just like it. I like that it's clean. I like that it's straightforward. I like that it looks kind of like Run DMC, you mm-hmm, know? Like, mm-hmm. I like that it's just powerful, capital, bold letters. And I like that it gives strength to hip-hop fathers. I like yeah. that it makes me feel strong. I was carrying it around with me at work, and people be like, hey, what's that Rap Dad? Mm. You know? And be like, oh, it's about
right.
hip-hop, blah, 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 blah. And they're like, oh, cool. I feel like it's quick and to the point.
Yeah,
you know,
totally. I definitely think? Feel like, what do I think? Think? Yeah. I think it's a very straightforward cover, yeah. which I like. I love black and white. Yeah. I think black and white always works. Yeah. It's one of my favorite color combinations. Yeah. Yeah. I like it. I mean, it's not like, I don't know if it's my favorite cover ever made in the history of the world, but I think for what the book is and what yeah. the cover is, true. I think it's like totally right on.
I like the track list at the end too. I was writing down all the songs as he was going. Then I got to the end. I was like, oh,
of course. Good thinking, bro. Yeah. So if you're reading it and you're like, wait, yeah, there's just a track list. I'm sure there's a Spotify playlist that exists too.
Yes. True.
Someone totally put that together.
I have it. I got it.
Oh, perfect. But yeah, I like the cover. I just, yeah, it's, again, it's nothing special. Like, it's not a cover that I'll probably remember in 10 years. But, like, for what it is right now, and, like, when I see it, I'm like, this is that. This is the book. True. This cover is the book, for sure.
It gave me – the cover, I think, represents the book. And the book has helped me find a little bit more identity within myself.
That's not, so good.
But it's truth, man. Like, I even said it to you. When you sent it to me, I was like, oh, yeah, that sounds super cool. And as we're reading it, Trace, I just appreciate you, man. Like, it taught me a lot. And and Juan, wherever you're at, dog, I appreciate you, man. It just the journey you're going through is one that we all admire and respect. And yeah, it's all day by day, right? Just trying to be good examples for our little ones.
That's so good. I think we should end there. Yeah. You summed it up. Thank you guys so much for listening. And thank you, Josh, for coming on.
Thanks, Trace.
And we'll be back next week with a special guest. I won't tell you who it is, but I know. Thank you, and we'll see you guys in the stacks. That does it for us today on the stacks. Thank you guys so much for listening, and thank you to Josh Segarra for being our guest. I also want to say a huge thank you to the people over at Atria for sending the stacks a copy of Rap Dad. And make sure, if you haven't yet, go listen to the Short Stacks episode with Juan Vidal to hear about his process in writing Rap Dad. For more from the stacks, follow us on social media using the links in the show notes and see our articles and reviews on the website. Also, make sure you're shopping through the links in the show notes to help the stacks earn a small commission. Join the Stacks Pack to get inside access to this show, like perks and the virtual book club. There's a lot more over there, so go check out patreon.com/thestacks and join the fun. Thank you to our sponsor, My Mentor Book Club. For 50% off your first box of 2 nonfiction hardcover books, go to mymentorbookclub.com/thestacks. And thank you to Audible. To get your free 30-day trial and free audiobook download, go to audibletrial.com/thestacks. Make sure that you're subscribed to this show wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're listening through Apple Podcasts, will you take a moment to please rate and review the show? Our graphic designer is Robin McCrite, and our theme music is from Tagirigis. This show was created and produced by me, Tracy Thomas.